This is Digital Story Podcast number 810, September 28th, 2021. Today's theme is Why I'm Still Podcasting. I'm Derek Story. The other day during a conversation, someone asked me, "Why, after all this time, are you still podcasting? Don't you get tired of the grind?" In the moment, I wasn't overly articulate, other than to say, I still like it. Scintillating, right? But after some reflection, I was able to put my fingers on a few key reasons. And I'm going to share those with you in today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So it was an interesting question as to why I continue to do this. It's a commitment, obviously, as all of you know, but it's something that I love as well. And you just can't say, well, I love it. I love it. Well, I guess you could say that, but again, not overly satisfying. And really, what lies beneath that? That is the interesting stuff. So I started thinking about that and I go, wow, there are a number of things here. So I decided to write my thoughts down, and I made it a post for Medium.com. I really like the post. I thought it expresses well what I think about podcasting and why I enjoy doing it so much. And I thought for today's show, I would start out by reading you the post on Medium.com. I know I talk about my articles there every now and then, but I don't think I've actually read you one from there. And my articles are usually right around 500 words, usually about 3 minutes, sometimes 4 minutes if I get really long-winded. This one is right around 500 words, and it's right about 3 minutes. And I thought I'd read it to you because really it's the best way for me to express these reasons why we're all here right now. So let's let her fly, okay? I actually have paper here. You may hear it in the background. I like reading off paper. It's better than the screen for me. All right, here we go. So the title of this is Why, 809 Episodes Later, I'm Still Podcasting. And this is on Medium.com right now. There are three ways I like to connect with other photographers. In person, preferably over a cup of coffee in some beautiful location during a workshop. Here on Medium, through writing, and over the airwaves via my podcast. In terms of production, podcasting is the most challenging of the trio because there's more technology involved. But when it works, and I'm invited to ride along with another enthusiast during their morning commute, or join them for an evening walk with the dog, it's magic. Podcasting is storytelling. When I was a kid going to summer camp, one of my favorite events was the evening campfire. I was mesmerized sitting there on a log with others in front of a crackling blaze while one of the counselors spun a tale about ghosts or historical figures. Today, that's what podcasting is for me. It's a chance to connect with others who share my passion for photography and adventure. Those two things go hand in hand. Adventure is the activity, and photography is how we creatively document it. Take away the adventure, and all you have are camera parts. During the dark nights of the pandemic, we had to huddle together like Antarctic penguins to weather the storm. Podcasting took on a different meaning then. It became a lifeline to a cherished activity that had become constrained. Adventure was canceled. We had to rediscover creativity within the narrow radius of our neighborhoods. Together, via podcasts, we recalibrated and rediscovered black and white photography, experimented with DIY projects, and embraced new techniques such as infrared. We couldn't count on a lot of things during those days, but every one of us knew there would be a fresh episode every Tuesday. And for 30 minutes, we could feel like ourselves again. Podcasting connects us in a way that's as enduring as storytelling itself, but with convenience. In the book, Where the Crawdads Sing, connection is what Kaya wanted more than anything. When everyone else had left her, she endured an abusive father for those cherished few moments of interaction. After he left, she would pace at the edge of the marsh waiting hours, sometimes days, for a cheating boyfriend to touch and to talk to. And when there weren't any people around, which was most of the time, she befriended the natural world that surrounded her. We don't live in a shack on the edge of a marsh in North Carolina, but many days it feels that way. And unlike Kaya, we don't have to wait for the distant hum of an outboard motor approaching on the waterway. We can reach for our earbuds, tap an icon on the smartphone, and listen to someone we care about tell a story. And for those 30 minutes, they are talking directly to us. We are connected. This is why I both listen to and create podcasts. Technology has done its fair share to tear us apart, but those weekly episodes are the exception. They bring us together. Podcasting is summer camp, morning coffee, and handholding all rolled into one. And that's why, 809 episodes later, I love it more than ever. I just wanted to share that with you because for me, podcasting is personal. I have met many of you over the years, either at trade shows or at workshops. We've shared emails. We've talked on the phone. I mean, all the different ways. And the one thing that runs through all those communications is the podcast. Often that's how you came to know me. That's how I came to know you. And once that happens, then we're together. We get to share these experiences. We get to learn new things. And you know I'm going to be there, and I know you're going to be there. And like I said, in the world today, that is a rare thing. And I'm very thankful to be able to do it. And I just wanted to thank you personally for being part of it. Well, Canon has been in the news a lot lately, haven't they? And this piece here, I thought was kind of interesting. You know, there's a lot of noise, and not image noise, but buzz, I should say, around the Canon EOS R3. And I thought this angle that I saw in this article on F-stoppers, well, it fascinated me, because we're talking about essentially a $6,000 camera. So the headline is, Canon confirms the EOS R3 is not a flagship camera. And I have a link to the entire article on F-stoppers that you can read if you wish. And the link is in the show notes. But let me read you what they wrote here. The Canon EOS R3 is one of the most technologically advanced cameras that Canon has produced. Improvements to the autofocus alone put the R3 ahead of almost every camera that Canon has ever produced. Despite this, Canon maintains that the EOS R3 is not a one series flagship camera. Okay, $6,000 still doesn't get you a flagship in the world of cameras. By the way, I just had my Audi A3 evaluated, you know, just to see what it was worth in this used car market. It's a beautiful car. I've talked about it many times. And it came in at $4,000. And this is a heck of a car. It's old, right? It's 2007, which is old by car standards. But just to put things in perspective, the Audi A3 that is just this crazy fun luxury car, $4,000. The EOS R3, not flagship camera, $6,000. I just wanted to get that out there. Let me continue with the piece here on F-stoppers. The Canon EOS R3 is the priciest RF mount camera to date. With a price point of almost $6,000, it sits uncomfortably close to the Canon 1D 10 Mark III, the current Canon flagship camera. The R3 includes a number of improved features such as video quality, autofocus, and a significant jump in the number of frames it can capture per second, albeit with an electronic shutter. However, the Canon EOS R3 is still not considered a flagship camera by Canon. In a recent discussion with them, it was confirmed that the R3 does not replace the 1D to become the new flagship. The key reasons not considered a flagship camera is because the 1D series cameras are designed to operate in far more challenging conditions. Although the R3 does have similar weather sealing when the hot shoe cap is attached, it may not be capable in tougher environments. Interestingly, this could end up being a challenge for Canon. If a $6,000 camera is not a flagship, what will an actual 1 Series RF mount camera cost? And what kind of features could we see in a potential 1 Series RF mount? That's a great question. And I guess we're just going to have to sit tight and see what happens. The article does go on, but I think you get the point. I certainly do. And they conclude by saying, in general, photographers that shoot with 1 Series cameras expect zero compromises. And based on the EOS R3 and what it can do, Canon may have something remarkable planned for its first ever RF mount flagship camera. All right. And then, of course, the ancillary question there is, how much will it cost, right? If $6,000 doesn't get you cream of the crop for your camera, then how much will the cream of the crop cost? The times we live in, right? Our first writing workshop is coming up in December, Writing for Artists Who Want to Publish or Just Get Better. Now, this is an online workshop. We're going to be working through our online workshop site, Derek Story Online. We're going to be meeting once a week via Zoom. We're going to have assignments. I'm going to share things that I've learned over the years, not only learned working with publishers and writing books, also publishing articles for Macworld Magazine, Medium, and so forth. I just really look forward to this because much in the way that I was talking earlier in the show, how I love connecting with other photographers, I have similar feelings for connecting with other writers as well. And it's not that it's a different part of my brain, but it kind of is, right? For me, when I write, it is something that I actually have to work up to over the course of a day. And then, I sleep on it, and then I usually get up early, and then I write it, and then it just comes out. And there's this whole kind of very specific workflow where I feel like I can make good photographs just about any time of day and in practically any frame of mind. Now, obviously, some days I'm sharper than others behind the camera, but it's a different experience writing for me than it is taking photographs. And I've never really had a chance since I was a tutor in college, and I worked for the state of California when I was going to college as an English major, where I would tutor other students who were trying to pass their writing exams to graduate, things like that. Since that time, since I was in college tutoring, I haven't really had a chance to have a teaching workshop-like experience with other writers. And that is going to end this December, and I'm really looking forward to it. We have folks signed up already. We have a good group signed up. We have a couple seats open. If you're interested in this, you can click on the link in the show notes, or you can go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on workshops, and check it out there. As I said, this is the first workshop that I'm going to do after I get back from the Oregon coast. So I'm going to be in this really, I think, pretty good frame of mind and ready to just hunker down and spend some time with other writers. I hope you can join me if you too enjoy writing. How I use two printers to save money. This is a post that I put on Digital Story on Sunday, it's a workflow that sort of just organically happened. And I think part of the way that it developed was that I ran out of ink for my Canon Pro 100, and I had to wait for it to arrive. You don't have to wait very long these days, fortunately, but I was ready to do a printing job, and I fired up the Canon, and a few of the cartridges were dry, and I just go, oh my gosh, all right, I can't do that job. What I did was I started working with the other printer that I had, a little multifunctional printer. It's a Canon MG6821. And when I bought it for like $65. And it's really a great printer. It really is. It does scanning. It does, I can copy things. You know, I can make copies like a photocopier. It prints up to 8.5 by 11. I can run little prints through it. I can do fine art cards through it. I mean, it's a nice little printer. I really enjoy it. So what I decided to do while I was waiting for the ink for the Pro 100 to come, I said, you know what? I'm going to get the files ready that I have to make big prints of. And I needed to make a couple 11 by 14s and a couple 13 by 19s. I said, I'm going to get these files ready. I'm going to do my test prints on the little Canon, the 6821. And then I'll be all ready to go when the ink comes for the Pro 100. So I did that. So I used the same paper in the multifunctional printer that I was going to use in the Pro 100. And I, you know, the drivers are the same because I'm working with Canon drivers. So the driver settings were pretty much the same. Now, there aren't as many ink wells in the little printer as there are in the big one. But nonetheless, I was able to do a lot of testing, really got to get to know the images. Made some adjustments to the files. And, you know, by the time the ink came for the Pro 100, I felt like I was in pretty good shape. Now, the thing about working with the little printer is that I don't use Canon ink in there. I started using Star ink, which is a replacement ink cartridge, third party, that costs a fraction, and I mean a fraction, of what I spend for the Canon ink. And I started doing that a while back just because I use this little printer so much, and it was just too expensive using the Canon ink. And I said, all right, the reviews on these replacement cartridges are good. The printer likes them. Why not try that? So I tried it a while back. In fact, I did an article quite a while ago about this very topic. And since that time, since way back when I started using this third-party ink, I haven't had any problem with the printer at all. And I'm saving a ton of money. Here's the thing. If I'm making an archival print, then I'm still not trusting this ink. This ink is great for shipping labels. It's great for snapshots. It's great for, you know, everyday stuff. But an archival print that I'm going to put behind glass and a mat and hang on the wall, I still want the best ink possible. What I decided to do was work up this workflow. You've already figured out what I did, right? Work up this workflow where I do all my test printing with 8.5 by 11s using the little printer, using the third-party ink, feel really comfortable with the files, and then do a big print on the same paper. And most of the time I'm using Red River paper, Arctic Polar Luster. Now, I'm always using Red River paper, but in terms of the surface, a lot of my favorite surface is the luster surface, and I like the really crisp white of the Arctic Polar. So I ran 8.5 by 11s through the little printer, got all ready to go, made some adjustments to the file. Here's what happened when I ran those files through the Pro 100 once I had the ink in place. I nailed them on the first try. I could not believe it. Usually I'm pretty good, and I can do it in 2, maybe 3 tries. I was nailing these on the first try. I used the same settings in the driver that I had been using before, same paper, same everything, but the images, and I will tell you this, were more vibrant using the Canon ink than what I was getting with the third-party ink. I could see a difference. And when those 13 by 19s came out, first time, right on the screws, but even more beautiful than what I had seen with the smaller printer, I was just going, this is a cool workflow. I have to share this. So I think that part of what makes it work are having both your smaller printer and then your big photo printer be the same brand so that you're working with the same drivers. Even though the ink configuration is different, it's very helpful having the same driver. So that's one thing that I think I would recommend. But you can buy the smaller multifunctional printer for less than a set of ink cartridges for the big one. In fact, I could buy two of those small multifunctional printers for the price of one set of ink cartridges for the Pro 100, all right? Even if you don't have a matching smaller printer, you could buy one, and the money you would save, you would get back really fast, really fast. And then there are all sorts of different third-party inks. Like I said, I use Star Ink. I have a picture of the box that I buy with the printer in the article that I published on Sunday, so you can take a look at it. It's the only one that I really have experience with, but I like it a lot. I think it's really cool, and I save a ton of money. So that is my workflow. That is, and I'm sticking to it now. I can't believe that it took me this long to figure out this workflow. I mean, it's just like so obvious once I start using it, I go, why haven't I been doing it this way for years? I would run 8x10s through the Pro 100 or 8.5x11s test prints, but I never did it on a separate printer with third-party ink and then saved it. So what's going to happen is the ink in my Pro 100 is going to last a lot longer now, and I'm going to save quite a bit of money and save paper too, because when I run the big sheets through the Pro 100, the odds of me getting it right the first time are pretty good. So I wanted to share that with you. Those of you who are printing, I'd be curious to hear what you think of it. You can comment on our Facebook page where I post this podcast. It's really cool, and I'm sticking with this system now. I got it dialed in. I'm just going to ride those prints off into the sunset. Where I have a little virtual camera club news. First one is for Inner Circle members. First of all, thank you, Inner Circle members, those who support us through Patreon. Thank you so much for being a part of our community that helps keep this podcast on the air. But I also want to remind you, in case you've missed the posting on our Inner Circle site, that we are going to have our first annual gathering of the clans. I'm calling it that. Annual gathering of the clans on Saturday, October 23rd. So all Inner Circle members are invited to this. It's going to be like an hour and a half. I'm going to go through State of the Union, you know, where we're standing right now. I'm going to talk about a few things that I'd like your feedback on. We're going to be able to, you know, interact with each other some. And I just want to get us all together, or as many of us together as possible. I can only support 100 at once on my Zoom account. So it'll be, you know, the first 100 that sign up will be able to attend. But I'm going to record it, and then all Inner Circle members will be able to watch it later on. I'll post it and make it available to all Inner Circle members. I was just thinking that it'd be so much fun. You know, we do polls, and we have articles, and we comment on our Patreon site. Enjoy that immensely. You know that because I talk about it. But we've never had a live event before. And I was just thinking the other day, I go, I think a live event would be a hoot. So you have to be an active Inner Circle member in order to participate. But if you are, and this sounds interesting to you, it's on October 23rd. And I have a post that goes over all the details and everything on the Patreon site. So just go over there and take a look. And thank you so much for your support for this podcast and for our photography community. I have received some film camera donations recently. They kind of come in spurts. So first of all, I want to thank those of you who have contacted me and who have followed through and donated cameras to the film camera shop. It's so much fun getting cameras from our audience, film cameras, because, you know, I tend to stick with the same cameras. You know, I have a group of cameras that I work with because I have parts for them. So it's much easier to repair something that you have parts for. So I tend to stick with, you know, like the Nikon FG and, you know, the Nikon N2020, the Pentax Program Plus, you know, all the cameras that I normally carry in the shop. The fun thing about working with our photography community and their donations is that I'm exposed to cameras that I never would have dreamed working on or restoring or having in the shop. So your donations, in addition to helping support the shop, helping get cameras affordably and reliably into people's hands who are starting out in analog photography or who are students or who just love it, in addition to all of that, it breathes new life into the shop and it brings in cameras that normally people wouldn't see there. And I don't think I've ever mentioned that aspect of it, but it's an aspect that really jumped out at me recently when I was working on some of the new donations. So thank you those who have donated. I really appreciate it. And if you want to donate, it's so easy. All you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on the contact form, choose camera donation. It's one of the boxes there, one of the categories. Let me know what you have. You can save a step by putting your shipping address in there if you wish. And then I'll get back to you and I'll get you a box. I'll get you a prepaid label and a little thank you note and everything that'll arrive at your door. All you got to do is tape the box together, put the cameras in there, let USPS know you want to pick up. They'll pick up at your place for free and then they'll come back to me. I'll get it cleaned up and ready to go and all spiffy and get them in the camera shop. And it's just a win-win-win all the way around. So if you have a film camera that's gathering dust and not doing anyone any good at all, I can put it in the hands of someone who will absolutely love it. And again, thank you to all of you who have donated. I truly appreciate it. And finally, I want to give a big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. Obviously, they're top of mind this week as I was working on these prints, this project. Their Arctic Polar Luster is such a beautiful paper. I'll tell you, if you like a clean white paper, and if you like a little bit of luster surface, not too glossy, but not too matte, it's like right in between. This paper, to me anyway, I feel like it makes my images just jump right off. Just jump right off the frame, and right into the eyes of whoever is viewing the print. And that's just one of the many surfaces. They have some rag papers that to me feel every bit as good as the expensive rag papers that I used to use in the chemical darkroom. The matte papers are gorgeous, and the matte papers have just that little bit of coating on them. You can't really tell. They look like matte paper. They feel like matte paper, but you get really nice saturation on your blacks especially. And when you're printing black and white on Red River matte paper, it looks sharp, it looks beautiful. These guys, they just know what they're doing and they're such a joy to work with. Longest running sponsor of this podcast. I truly like working with them and I like them as people as well. They have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And a huge thanks to them for sponsoring this podcast. All right, that's gonna do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I look forward to talking to you next week. Stay safe, be creative. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.